Meat!
Yo!
What's going on today, man?
Nada, just living the dream, my man.
All right, good. What are we fighting over then?
We've got some Cardinals tickets on Saturday, yeah. July 25th. The Cardinals host the Astros. That night, 30,000 fans ages 16 and older will take home a replica 2004 National League Champions Mystery Player Ring. It's courtesy of Edward Jones. You can get your tickets at cardinals.com/promotions.
Very nice. All right, let's bring in today's fighter. It's Wes. Wes, what's going on, man? How are we doing today?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing well, man. Having some fun here. You know that it's flashback week on 101 ESPN. That means that we might not have a sports question. You okay with that?
Yeah, I mean,
it is what it is.
It's probably kind of preferred right now if I'm going to beat Randy.
I'm right there with
you.
Honestly, I think that that's the way to go.
You know who doesn't prefer it?
Randy.
Yeah.
I love it. He gets all bitter, Bob, but he's been winning
really
so much.
Mad.
So it's totally fine. Maybe Wes can change that. You ready here to get this thing cranking?
Yes, sir.
All right, Wes, here we go. Question number one. Who was the season one winner of American Idol? Was it Ruben Studdard, Kelly Clarkson, or Clay Aiken?
Kelly Clarkson?
That's how I
answer my question, too.
If it's a question mark at the end, it still counts. Question number two. In 2009, Martin Brodeur broke the NHL's career wins record with 552. Whose record did he break? Was it Patrick Roy, as Meat would call him? Patrick Waugh.
That's correct.
Ed Belfour or Grant Fuhr?
I'm going to go with Patrick Waugh, just because you mentioned Meat, and I feel like if Meat would go with it, then, you know, I'd probably go with it.
Yeah, well he would call him Roy.
Yeah, he did pronounce it wrong, but it works.
Question number three, Wes. Outkast, the group, was extremely popular in the 2000s. In their song, Hey Ya, in that song, they urge people to shake it like a what? Is it like a Laffy Taffy? A salt shaker, or a Polaroid picture?
Oh, it's a Polaroid picture. I'm one for three, I know.
Damn right it was, Wes. Question number four. The highest grossing movie of all time at the worldwide box office was released in the 2000s. Which movie was it? Was it The Passion of the Christ, Lord of the Rings, or Avatar?
Avatar.
All right, let's bring in Randy. Wes, how are we feeling?
Not great.
All right. Oh, really? Oh, that's too bad.
I like that. Wes, how often do you shake it like a Polaroid picture?
I mean, you've got to get a good shake session in at least twice a day.
Totally I agree with that. That. Yeah.
I feel like it's good for the health, mind, body, soul, Ronch.
Yeah.
Good for all of those
things. I believe it's part of the Play 60
Do you think
campaign.
It is?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you think
so.
It's part of the TB12 method as well?
It has to be.
It could be. Hey, Randy, when you get settled in, say hello to Wes.
Hey, Wes, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Outstanding. Great to have you with us. Thanks for listening. Thanks for playing.
All right, Randy, are you ready for this probably not any sports trivia 4 o'clock fight?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. It is. It's the 2000s today, just so you know. Question number one, Randy. Who was the season one winner of American Idol?
That's a very good question. Yeah. I will say that Justin Guarini finished second to Kelly Clarkson.
What the?
I knew that too.
Who the hell's Justin Guarini?
He finished second. He had big hair.
And there was
is
a co-host.
They made a movie together.
Yep, Sean McVay had a co-host that year named Brian Dunkelman. McVay.
Yeah, Dunkelman got Dunkelmaned.
It was not McVay. It was Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, yeah. Close enough.
Oh, sorry.
But yeah, the two of them made a movie together,
they
and it
did,
was bad.
And they hated it.
Well, I can see why. What was it? Kelly and Justin? Something like that.
It was kind of pitchy, dog.
Not good. All right, question two, Randall.
Yes, sir.
In 2009, Marty Brodeur broke the NHL's career wins record with 552. Whose record did he break?
I believe it had been broken just a few years earlier by Patrick Roy.
I think you mean Roy.
Yes. Patrick Roy.
Okay, Randy, question number three. In the 2000s, the group Outkast was extremely popular.
Yes, they were.
Especially their song, Hey Ya.
Hey, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it. A Polaroid picture.
There we go.
That was the question.
That'll do.
You got it.
That's great. Meathead fun with that one.
Yeah,
Meat's a big Outkast fan, by the way.
Hey,
yeah, found that.
Really
right?
Smell- oh, yeah, yeah. That was my era.
Who's your favorite, Big Boy or Three Stacks? Who do you like?
Andre 3000. Yeah, come on, right, man.
Did you see him playing the flute at a random craft store?
No.
Yeah, it was yesterday.
What?
Apparently, he's just rocking the flute. Just,
yes, flute?
Put in Andre 3000. I think he was at, like, Michael's or something, breaking it down.
Fantastic.
That's awesome.
Question number four, Randy. Yes. The highest grossing movie of all time at the worldwide box office was released in the 2000s. Which movie was it?
I'm going to have to do the old lifeline here, BT.
All right. You've got The Passion of the Christ.
No.
Lord of the Rings. Avatar.
Okay, let's start with this. When Passion of the Christ was being filmed, Jim Caviezel is Scott Linehan's brother-in-law. Scott Linehan was the offensive coordinator for the Vikings when this thing was being filmed. And so late on a Sunday, they're in Europe taping this. Jim Caviezel is literally up on the cross looking down at the crew saying, "Hey, what's the Vikings score?"
Come on.
Jesus is asking what the Vikings score is.
That's an awesome story.
That's really awesome. I had no idea they were related.
Yeah, brother.
That's
brother,
awesome.
Yeah, brother-in-law.
Wow.
So I'm going to go. I think I heard Avatar there. I'll go with Avatar.
We got a winner. You fellas know your 2000s. It's a tie. It's 4-4, and you nailed it. It's Kelly Clarkson, who was the season one winner of American Idol. It is Patrick Waugh, whose Martin Brodeur broke his record. It is a Polaroid picture.
Like a Polaroid picture.
It is not Laffy Taffy. It's not a salt shaker. It is a Polaroid picture. And the highest grossing movie of all time is, in fact,
from
Avatar.
Justin to Kelly.
Nope. Oh. Nope. That's not it. $2.78 billion is what it is. Avengers Endgame is second now at 2.18. I haven't seen that one yet, but I want in. Wes, congrats, man. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Wes.
Hang on.
By the way, we got multiple texts about...
Did you know this?
No. Oh, well, I didn't even know who the guy was. This Justin Guarini?
Yeah.
Guarini?
He was here in the Muni a couple years ago.
Yeah, do you know
ago.
Who he is now? BT, tell Randy who he is,
well,
according
apparently,
to our texters.
He is a little sweet in the Dr. Pepper commercials.
Oh, I had no clue.
Yeah. That is news to me, man.
The guy dressed up as a cowboy and sings, "It's the sweet one."
Yeah.
The Cardinals have announced a host of moves today. They've activated Matt Carpenter from the 10-day IL and purchased the contract of lefty pitcher Chasen Shreve from Memphis. And they will also recall Andrew Kisner from Memphis tomorrow when they open the second half of the season. Yadier Molina has been placed on the 10-day IL with a strained right thumb tendon, retroactive to July 8th. And the Cardinals have optioned both Tyler Webb and Rangel Ravelo to Memphis and transferred Jordan Hicks from the 10-day IL to the 60-day IL to make room for Shreve on the 40-man roster. So, Marp up, Kisner up, Shreve up, Yachty IL, Ravelo down, Webb down, and Hicks to the 60.
Unfortunately, not too shocking about Yachty. I mean, the way that they stayed away from him the last series, you never see that guy take back-to-back off days. You knew he was hurting. You hoped that the 4 days would help out and get him back to right, but obviously
you punch that emoji enough,
time.
It's going to strain your tendon.
the middle finger emoji.
Well, yeah.
I'm guessing he did that with the other hand. Chances are he's better safe than sorry.
Chasen Shreve,
isn't he? What's that?
He's amphibious, right?
He must be amphibious. Yeah, yeah. Contacts with both hands. Chasen Shreve's been throwing the ball really well in Memphis. It'll be nice to have another lefty out there. Hopefully, he has continued success. And Matt Carpenter, everybody knew that he would be back on Friday. Keep talking about keys to success in the second half. Well, we certainly know that if Matt Carpenter can heat up and be the guy that we've seen in the past, well, that's a big key to success.
Coming up next in the Fast Lane, the 2000s gave up many great moments.
Hmm?
They did. They gave up many great moments.
The 2000s, like the decade?
Yeah.
What did they give up? I don't get it.
Like the, for example, the Russell Branyon home run. That
what
was in the 2000s.
Oh.
That was in
I
the 2000s.
I don't know if we needed that.
Well, it was one of the things that happened in the 2000s, and it was given up, right?
Yeah, that's true, actually.
So we just have to...
A few things given up.
Yeah.
We'll relive every home run I gave up coming up next.
Also happening in that decade, though, the worst day in U.S. history. We're going to flash back to the morning of Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, next on 101 ESPN. All right, we welcome your text, 65780, the Hot Shots text line. September 11th, 2001. Let's start with BT. Where were you?
I was in college. I remember waking up to my roommate that was already in the living room watching the news. He's like, dude, you gotta see this. And then we both end up getting phone calls from our families. I was in St. George, Utah at the time. And just like everybody else, you see it, and you know how many lives were lost, how many lives were affected, the ripples that are there. While at the moment, they didn't quite set in. They certainly did. I believe that many classes that I had were canceled that day also, even being
not all,
you know, as far away. Maybe they all were. I don't remember. Yeah. That's where I was, and it was quite obviously one of the most awful moments we've had in the history of our country.
Yeah, I had graduated not too long before that, so I was back here living at home, and my dad was working swing shifts, and he happened to be on the daytime, and I came out of my room, and he said, are you watching TV? Because you probably need to be. And I wasn't, so I went back and turned it on, and I didn't turn it off all day. It was that was a really hard thing to I guess conceptualize, man. It didn't feel like that was happening. I actually went back a few days ago for whatever reason. I'm not even sure why. I think I just stumbled upon it, but it was Howard Stern's broadcast at the time, and that was before he went to XM. He was still on terrestrial radio, and they're watching it happen, and they're all still kind of, and this is nothing against them, but they were all still sort of joking about the first plane hitting, because nobody knew what it was at the time. They just, you know, it seemed like an accident. They didn't even know what kind of plane it was. They didn't know it was a commercial airliner, but it took them maybe a half hour or so before they realized, oh my God, this is bad, and we're under attack, and this is not an accident.
The Blues were doing training camp in Alaska that year, and I was with the Blues in Anchorage, and Anchorage is 3 hours behind us. The West Coast is 2 hours behind us. That's another hour. So when the second plane hit, it was about 4:45, and my cell phone, I had I don't even remember what my phone service was at that time, but it didn't work in Anchorage. Everybody else's worked, but mine didn't. But so I'm in the hotel, and I get a call from Joan, who tells me, are you watching this? So I turn on the TV at 4:45 in the morning there. And in the hours after all of the planes across America, for those of you that weren't alive for 9/11, there was not an airplane in the sky over the United States of America that day.
What's really eerie is you can go to, and I don't know exactly where the website is, you can Google it, and it will show you the dots. It'll show you the map of the United States, the dots of where all the flights are, and then the timeline, and you just see slowly the dots disappear from the screen, and then there's nothing in the air. It's incredibly eerie to see something like that.
And so one of the things that happened, and you can find this on the internet if you just do a Google search for September 11th Korean Airlines, and it was Korean Airlines Flight 85. So the information about the attacks is relayed to the crew, the KAL crew. The pilot in command's ACAR's message reply included the letters HJK, interpreted as a distress signal indicating that the flight had been hijacked. This flight's on its way to Anchorage, and when ordered to squawk 7500, that's a hijack code, the pilot complied despite miscommunication that implied he would disregard the instruction. So that flight was ordered to divert to Whitehorse International Airport in Canada, in the Yukon Territory. Well, they thought that flight was coming to Anchorage to get the highest building in Anchorage, which was the hotel that we were staying at. Oh. So over the PA system, they say, ladies and gentlemen, you must evacuate the hotel immediately. It was the most scared I've ever been. So I called home. My knees are shaking. And it was unbelievable. Well, and we were out for a couple hours.
I'm pretty sure there were a lot of buildings around the country. I know the Sears Tower, I think they may have evacuated. Because at the moment, when it's all going on, you don't know what's a target and what's not. So that was just a surreal, scary time for everybody. Once you finally realized what was happening, that was totally frightening.
And obviously, baseball stopped. That was when the NFL really was held in high regard by all the other sports leagues. And everybody else waited to see what the NFL would do. And when the NFL decided not to play the following weekend, then baseball followed suit, NASCAR followed suit. Obviously, hockey didn't play the preseason games that they were supposed to play. And the attacks did bring the nation together for a time. At one point, after those attacks, this nation was really unified.
It's and it is crazy because you know that a sporting event will never bring back anybody. It never takes away pain, but it did help people heal a little bit. If you can have anything that can distract you from a moment like that and certainly unify in a time where, good Lord, you know, knows we needed to unify more than ever, sports were able to bring that a little bit, maybe more so than anything else out there could have.
It gets you moving in the right direction, you know, and it's a long process to get back to normal. And I'm not sure that I don't know if we ever really got back to normal.
No.
Not the way it was before. I mean, everything is completely different. Yeah. But I think it took a really long time before, at least in that moment, things felt right again. Mm-hmm. You hear comedians talk about not being able to joke. When's it okay to start laughing again? SNL right. had that issue. David Letterman talking
Definitely.
About the same thing. Like, when can we make jokes again? It was such a difficult time. A
couple of texts from the 573. I was working at a warehouse when I found out that the towers were hit. It pushed me to join the military. And we appreciate your service to our country. Another one from the 573. I was in the Army at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, watching on TV, sitting on my bags, waiting to go to war. And you certainly wow. do know that if you're in the military, yep. you're going to be doing something very, very quickly.
Yeah, and well, first of all, again, thank you very much for your service and what you did. And there were so many that, just like our couple of techs or the one that was working in a warehouse and said, man, it made me want to enlist. There was that swell of pride. Say, no, not here, not to us. And it affected, obviously, the lives of those that were lost and anybody that was near them, but it affected lives all over this country and changed the course for so many.
Here's another text. This one is from the 314. I was walking to the second period of my senior year of high school. TVs were all on the news coverage, and I watched as the second plane hit live. I'd already been talking to a recruiter, so I enlisted in the Marine Infantry shortly thereafter. That's three texts in a row Jeez. That were involved in the military, and 9/11 was a big part of it. Somebody says, Randy, with the flights grounded, how did you get home from Anchorage? We were supposed to leave on Wednesday. And wound up coming back on Saturday. One other note, by the way, in Alaska, as they do in Canada, and I'm sure they do in a lot of places here, they will have a flight that will take you out to hunt and fish in the middle of nowhere. And the only way you can get in touch with people is if you have a satellite phone. Well, most people don't have satellite phones. So on the Sunday before and the Monday, and of course the flights the buildings were hit on Tuesday, Sunday and Monday, a lot of flights went out to these remote areas in Alaska to allow these gentlemen to go and fish. And they were supposed to be picked up on Wednesday or Thursday or Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And they're out there in these islands where you can't get anywhere because you have no motorized vehicles. All you can do is fish. That's how you're going to eat, and that's how you're going to survive. They're thinking their planes are going to come back and pick them up on Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday. And they never do. And then finally, when the flights were able to once again get up in the air on Saturday, might have been Sunday, these guys, the pilots, loaded up with USA Today, stacks and stacks of USA Today's, and said, man, I'm sorry. I was supposed to be here on Tuesday, I know, but here's what happened. Can you imagine not having any idea about what happened to being out there in the middle of nowhere?
No way to reach the outside world.
And of course, the voice that brought us back here in St. Louis was the voice of Jack Buck.
Since this nation was founded under God more than 200 years ago, we have been the bastion of freedom, the light that keeps the free world aglow. We do not covet the possessions of others. We are blessed with the bounty we share. We have rushed to help other nations. Anything, anytime, anywhere. War is just not our nature. We won't start, but we will end the fight. If we are involved, we shall be resolved to protect what we know is right. We have been challenged by a cowardly foe who strikes and then hides from our view. With one voice we say, we have no choice today. There is only one thing to do. Everyone is saying the same thing and praying that we end these senseless moments we are living. As our fathers did before, we shall win this unwanted war, and our children will enjoy the future we'll be giving.
It's the Fast Lane, and it is flashback week to the 2000s on 101 ESPN. If you are a professional athlete that likes to quiet opposing fans, Cardinals did that twice in 2005, obviously, the Albert home run, and then the 2006, that home run by Yachty in, of all places, New York. BT, you talk about a pin drop situation. Those people were beside themselves.
Oh, yeah, they were. But just because of the buzz that was in that stadium already. I mean, from beginning to end, I mean, the thing was jumping. The Andy Chavez catch happens. The place is shaking. And then Yachty hits a two-run bomb off of Heilman, and everybody is, oh, no. Yeah, it was
great.
Yeah, it was awesome. It hushed the crowd at least for a few minutes.
Recent history tells us the Cardinals aren't going to go out and make a huge move during this deadline period. Is there anything that could happen between now and the deadline that would change the way the team views their approach in terms of being super aggressive in going for it this year? And that's assuming that their approach is what we've seen in recent years. We should note that last year during the offseason, John Mozeliak talked about the importance of the Cardinals making the playoffs in 2019. Whether that'll translate to a big move at the trade deadline, I don't know. Nobody does.
Yeah, I don't either. Just talking about, can anything happen leading up to change the way that you go about your deadline or the way that you look at it or how you look to acquire talent? I say absolutely, and it's the way that you're playing up until the deadline. There's only one deadline this year. There's only one time to strike. So if the Cardinals go and rattle off 8-9 out of 10, like, oh, hell, let's make a push. If the opposite happened, you might be thinking to yourself, either stand pat, because, I mean, this is the team that you configured to go to battle with this year, and you believe that it was good enough to go win. Or maybe there are some pieces that teams are calling for that you can sell off a little bit. And I still don't believe that we're going to see the Cardinals do much selling. I don't know what pieces that everybody would be calling for. Certainly a lot of young pitching on the Cardinals that they're not going to want to part ways with. But I hope that we get the first scenario, that first scenario where they start playing good baseball and guys like Paul Goldschmidt and Matt Carpenter, who's back off the IL now, start swinging the bat well, and you're seeing good things, and it makes you want to make the move to pounce in a division that is very winnable currently.
What if one of the other two teams that we're most concerned with just go in the crapper here over the next couple of weeks, and there are still deals to be made because we're 20 days away from the trade deadline right now, and there are still players available, or it looks like they're going to be players available with maybe 4 or 5 days before we get to that deadline, and the Brewers have just hit the tank. I don't see the Cubs doing that either. I mean, really, I realistically, probably neither team. But what if that does happen? Does that change how the Cardinals look at what they are going to do if they're just standing pat?
I think it's a great question because you look at, it's the whole looking at if you believe the team is talented enough to win a World Series, or are you just looking at the standings in general and say, hell, we got a chance to make it to the playoffs,
exactly.
And you just don't know. And I don't know the answer to that. But I was just thinking, though, as you were mentioning the Cubs and the Brewers, I think that at least here we keep saying that if the Cardinals are going to trade for something, most likely it would be a starting pitcher. Like that's where they need.
Mm-hmm.
The Cubs will probably do the same thing, yep, or want to do the same thing. The Brewers certainly will want to do the same thing. You're going to have three teams within the division that are calling after the same players and jockeying with rival GMs about prospects for the same guy. And it's another case where you could find yourself just outside and then watching that other guy, you know, that guy that you're in on go somewhere else. That's not a great scenario.
So this is what the question becomes, and you touched on it there. Do the Cardinals see themselves as a team that needs a big move just to get to the playoffs, or a team that they're pretty confident is going to go to the playoffs one way or the other, whether it's the wild card or winning the division. But they need some help once they get there, because I think both the Brewers and the Cubs look at themselves as the team that's already got a pretty good chance of going, and more than likely going into the playoffs. So how do they separate themselves from all the teams that are going to be in the postseason? I think that's how they look at it, so they probably are going to be more aggressive than the Cardinals will.
And ultimately, it is going to come down to how Carpenter and Goldschmidt hit, because they aren't going to trade to replace those guys. We can rest assured that the Cardinals are not going to trade for a bat, because they really don't feel like there's anybody to replace in this lineup. It's the old where would you play him scenario. And if they're going to use assets, it's logical for them to use those assets for a starting pitcher. That's really the only thing. And there aren't going to be a lot of starting pitchers on the market. There might be four. And from what the Cardinals need, all four don't fit what they need.
Who are the four that you're looking at? The couple I have in mind, Bumgarner, Stroman, Bauer, and Greinke are the four that I've got in mind. You got another
one? I think
one?
Matthew Boyd. And
that's a good one.
Yeah.
I think Bauer's got to be out.
Why?
Because I just think Cleveland probably feels like, well, I don't know what they feel like. I think they should look at their situation like they've still got a good opportunity.
I just want him. So.
Well, yeah, so do I. So do I. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know how Cleveland's going to operate, but they should probably look at where they are in their division. And I know it's going to be tough to catch the Twins at this point, but that's the Indians are a good team that just isn't playing as well as it should be.
I got another starter for you guys from one of the same teams, and I want to see how interested you are. What about Robbie Ray?
I'm intrigued by him.
From Arizona. Yeah. We'll get a chance to see him over the weekend. I'm intrigued as well. His numbers have been very good.
Yep.
And Jim Brewer told us yesterday you don't want Zach Wheeler.
He was pretty adamant about that. So if you just want somebody that's just going to be there, that's great.
So there you go. The trade deadline is the 31st of this month. We're only 20 days away from the MLB's only trading deadline for 2019. Next up in the fast lane, for some, the 2000s was a real kick in the nuts, at least with Steve around. We'll hear from some of our favorite entertainers next in the fast lane on 101 ESPN. This former baseball player Donnie Baker joining us a couple of years ago here on 101 ESPN in the fast lane. He's a funny guy.
Donnie Baker cracks me up. I still watch it. Like it churns out videos like daily on Facebook and Twitter. They're the best. He's got his moon theory. He'd be planting corn on that if it was real.
I think it's valid.
Well, I think it's very valid.
I mean, there's dirt.
I think so. That's what they say.
We need produce. Why wouldn't you do it? He makes a great point.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, we had Steve-O on the show, and other than kicking meat in the jewels, he told us an interesting story about him getting arrested overseas.
How do you get arrested in Sweden? How do you get arrested in Sweden?
It was awesome. It was awesome. I got, my buddies were filming me outside the airport in Norway while I was attempting to swallow a condom, which I had filled with marijuana and tied in a knot.
Right, ball been there.
Right, but I put too much weed in there, and so I choked on it. Like, it got stuck in my throat. And I couldn't get it to go down or come up, you know, and I'm freaking out. I got on the airplane, and I flew to Sweden, which made me an international drug smuggler. And, you know, I got to Sweden. My throat was so injured, I couldn't tell if it was still stuck in there or what. So I called Knoxville for advice, and he's like, you're going to die.
That's what he said. Well,
pretty much. He's like, he told me specifically I would die of intestinal strangulation if it blocked up my intestines. So I'm like freaking out, and I'm pooping and waiting for it to come out. Of course, by the time it came out, the cops had read the newspaper because I'd done all these interviews saying, like, you know, they're like, how are you enjoying Sweden? And I'm like, dude, I'm not. I swallowed all these drugs, and it won't come out, and I think I'm going to die. And so I got arrested and spent 5 days in jail in Sweden.
That's not that bad, five days. I want to be there.
Well, right, but when they were searching my bag, they found a pill of ecstasy in
it. Oh, that's different.
Well, it was somebody else's, obviously.
Right, I told him it's not mine.
Yeah, right.
Steve-O is quite the character.
Well,
pretty funny.
That interview, by the way, went in a way different tangent than I thought it was going to. He was like really serious. He was with us for like a half hour, and he got serious for a while, and it was awesome. Kind of turned his life around from his smuggling marijuana in a condom days.
You know? So where is the audio of Meat getting his junk kicked?
Dude, it's still on Twitter. We're going to have to round that thing up. Maybe we should tweet it out again. We'll get Meat on that one.
That'd be funny.
It was funny for us. Meat was in some pain.
Now, we're Super Trooper fans here in the Fast Lane, and Jay Chandrasekhar of Super Troopers fame joined us and talked about some of the scenes in Super Troopers.
When Farva is naked, covered in powdered sugar, and he turns, and you can see his shriveled tuna can sitting there. And then I had to go up to Daniel Von Bargen, who's the police chief, and I said, could you take just a tiny look at it and kind of give the tiniest sneer? And he goes, all right. Yeah, I mean, it's insane, but, you know, we have a very clear idea of, you know, the best comedies have a range of jokes, right? So there's a world we set up, and no joke gets too big and too broad, and no joke is too subtle or too small, really. I mean, we're trying to, like, fit the jokes into a bandwidth, and so, you know, that nude Farva was at the top of the bandwidth. We didn't go anything bigger than that. Granted, maybe having sex with a fake bear in the woods might be up at that same level.
Sure. Classic stuff.
You know,
the bear scene is pretty good.
Hey, you, bear blanker.
I thought for sure. I'm watching the previews for Super Troopers. I remember seeing them before the movie actually came out, and I thought, this is going to be so bad. And then it's out for a couple of years, and I happen to be home for Christmas break, and it's on HBO, and I watch it. And I'm like, this is how did I not get onto this sooner? It's so great. And I had to take it back and show everybody. Guys, you got to see this movie. It's fantastic.
Then you're doing the repeater on everybody?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. In 2009, The Hangover debuted and grossed over $460 million at the box office. And a few years back, comedian Brian Callen joined us and talked about how he formed his character, Eddie, the wedding chapel owner.
I went to college with a guy named Tofik, and he was this Jordanian Israeli dude who would blow dry his hair, wore jeans that were so tight, he would pull his three-piece set to one side and put, he wore underwear. It was basically a testicle finch. And he would describe his night like this. I'm not kidding. He'd go, I took this chick to my bed last night, and I made her, and he would whistle and pump his fist in the air. I swear to God, by the time he was done, you wanted to take a shower. It was just like, dude, I can't take this. So I did that character for the director of The Hangover. He was supposed to be from New York, right? He was supposed to be a guy who was like, oh, you guys don't remember Eddie? What are you doing? And when I did it like that, when I played him like an Israeli porn star, basically, the director just fell out. Bradley Cooper fell out. They were all like, you got to do that. Do that character. So basically, all those lines were not written in the script. It was basically me, you know, just kind of coming up with weird stuff.
That's awesome.
You never know where inspiration might come from. It could be a roommate you had. You just got to run with it. I love having all the random interviews like that.
It's fun.
Yeah, I dig that stuff. And I like comedy, too, so those guys all worked out quite well.
Yeah.
Loved having Brewer on. And that's the second time we've had him on in, like, 8 months. We should get him on. He should be
he
a regular.
Loves us.
He's a friend of the show now.
He likes talking baseball.
He does. He gets fired up. That's what I love about Mets fans. Well, really, New York fans. They get so angry about their teams. I love it. We should get him on once a week.
Top movie of that decade. Zoolander was pretty good.
Well, I don't know if that's going to be a top thing. I don't know.
Oh,
I forget exactly why I was quoting that one the other day, but it was something about
your model.
A model, idiot.
Yeah.
Derek Zoolander, a model, idiot.
Avatar made a lot of money.
You know what? I did not love Avatar.
I didn't either.
I don't know why.
Yeah. BT Brokeback Mountain?
You know what? I got to be honest. I haven't seen the whole thing.
Okay. Good.
You see Jake Gyllenhaal's shirt for Pride?
No.
It says, I was a gay cowboy before it was cool.
Is that what that's from?
Clever.
I had no idea.
Yeah, that's what it's
that
from.
That is great. By the way, Gladiator came out in 2000, and
that's pretty good.
Big fan of that one. Also, I don't think it's underrated, but a movie that not too many people talk about, Almost Famous. You guys remember that one?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, love it.
Kate Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
And who isn't it? Jim Caviezel. He's in that one too.
I think
right?
so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both the Bourne Supremacy and the Bourne Ultimatum came out in that decade. Those are movies that I, when they're on, if I flip to them, I don't turn it off.
It was just on the other night. I did the same thing.
Yeah, they're on all the time. And I've wasted tons of my time in my life watching those movies.
It's not wasted, Randy. Well, it's invested is what it is.
Oh, thank you for putting it that way.
Where is, by the way, when you're talking about like mob-type movies, The Departed came out in 2006. Yep. Is that one up there pretty high for you guys?
That
I really,
really
enjoyed
good.
It.
I thought that was great.
By the way, so BT, you were talking, well, we had, who was the comedian we just were listening to the clip of?
Brian Callen.
And talking about his inspiration for his character in that movie, and that happens a lot to actors. Have you ever heard the story about The Dark Knight, which Heath Ledger is the Joker in that movie, and his part of his inspiration for how he was going to behave is an interview from Tom Waits. You guys know Tom Waits, he's the singer, and he was on some Australian TV program once, and he watched that interview. And that's how he kind of based how he was going to behave. So if you ever get a chance, just type into Google Tom Waits interview and watch him saunter out and then listen to him talk. And you're like, holy crap, that's the Joker from
You know, we should
Dark.
See if we can
really
get Heath Ledger on to figure out how he gets into a character like
that. This might actually be a precursor to a later segment.
Yeah, I bet he might be dead.
I got a feeling we're running with Dead or Alive for a third straight day because it's been such a hit. Oh. We got so many texts that we're killing it.
Yeah, we should have Rob Pelinka participate, the general manager of the Lakers. Because he set up a meeting between Kobe and Heath Ledger.
After he had died.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's right. Yep.
Next up in the fast lane, do you know anyone with a short temper? We know a guy that's coming your way next before Take It or Leave It on 101 ESPN.